Support comes from Catholic Charities. Driven by the message of love your neighbor, Catholic Charities is focused on improving lives in Maryland. Give the gift of love during this holiday season and learn more at cc-md.org/love.
Really, the thing about thru hiking is that every day it's a little bit of a leap of faith. You have to wake up with the knowledge that your feet are going to hurt and you're going to be hungry and you're going to smell really, really bad.
But from the back of the plane, I hear clear as day Gavin's voice scream, "You've got this, Mom. You've got this. Come on. Do this. This is your dream."
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Henkin.
And I'm Laura Wexler.
And this week on the podcast, Take That, Cancer, two stories about women setting a brave and joyful new course in the wake of sickness and loss.
So this first story is by a longtime Stoop friend, one-time intern, helper, all of those things, Sophia Garber. And she is a traveler in every sense of the word. And this is a story about her first big solo adventure.
I'm sitting in a hospital waiting room with a family that's not my own. I'm not even really sure what I'm doing there. I've been working at Ullman House, which is a free housing facility for young adults with cancer. And it's in my job description to be a support system for those folks. But nowhere in my training did it lay out how to prepare someone for the worst moment of their life. I'm sitting with a family as they prepare to make the decision to take their daughter off life support. And I am 24 at the time, and I am wildly unfamiliar with this level of tragedy. I look to my right at the mother, Mary, who I have spent so many mornings chatting and laughing and sharing meals with, and my heart breaks for the tragedy that she is about to feel. I look down at her hands and I see she's holding a tiny elephant figurine that I've given her. I had gotten that figurine a few months before. I had lost a dear friend of mine to cancer. And as I was trying to process that grief, I was walking down the street in Baltimore City and I saw a bracelet in a storefront that said, "Nevertheless, she persisted." And that was one of my friend Crystal's favorite quotes. So I went into the store and I bought it. And in chatting with the woman who was working there, I told her about Crystal and she smiled and she reached under the desk and grabbed an elephant and gave it to me. And she said, "This will give you comfort in your grief." So that morning, before I went into the hospital to be with their family, I found the little elephant and I felt like I could give it to Mary. And I gave it to her and I said, "When it all feels like too much, and I know it will, you can hold this and you'll find a little bit of comfort." And giving that to her felt a little bit like I was kind of passing on this legacy that my friend Crystal had left. She was a fierce advocate for young adult cancer and also for medical marijuana, but that's unrelated. And so I had this idea as I was looking at the elephant in her hands that maybe I could turn the grief that I was feeling and turn the sorrow that surrounds cancer and tragedy into something where I could create something that would allow Crystal to help young adults after she's gone. So I had this idea that I was going to fundraise $10,000 to support Ullman House and that I was going to get a giant yellow cowbell that they could hang at Ullman House, that the patients who were staying there and the families could ring the bell to celebrate whatever milestone was important to them. If that was finishing chemo, if that was getting to go home, whatever it was, they could celebrate. And I felt like that would give Crystal this legacy where people would know her name, and not only that, but she would get to celebrate with them. And I think that losing my friend, who meant so much to me, and also working in a space where there are these people who are your age, whose lives are utterly halted, it changed the way that I thought about how I wanted to proceed in my life. You know, I had the stark realization over and over of just the limited quantity of years that we have. And the only thing that made sense to me was to try and fill those years with as much joy as humanly possible. And so what that meant for me was doing the things that I wanted to. And what I had always wanted to do was to thru-hike the Appalachian Trail. I wanted to walk from Georgia to Maine, 2,200 miles, and become a thru-hiker. And when I was 10 years old, my grandma took me up Bear Mountain in New York, which is on the Appalachian Trail, or the AT, as we call it. And I don't remember a ton about that hike, but I remember she taught me how to poop in the woods, and I have used it many times since. And I remember the photo that she took of me. It hung on her fridge for years to come. It was a little version of me in my light-up sneakers with my arms outstretched on top of Bear Mountain, looking empowered and looking confident and loving being outside. And everything in me has always known that I would be back to that trail at some point. But it took Crystal passing away to really ignite that desire to do it now. Because why wouldn't I do it now? I don't know how much longer I'll be able to. So that was really a big push to get me underneath that arch in Amicalola Falls. And on March 14th, 2021, I took my first steps on the Appalachian Trail. I took them alone, and I took them scared out of my mind. But I took them. And I think that when I think about my through hike, part of that big leap of faith was those first big steps, because it was so scary. But really, the thing about through hiking is that every day it's a little bit of a leap of faith. You have to wake up with the knowledge that your feet are going to hurt, and you're going to be hungry, and you're going to smell really, really bad. But also with the understanding that you are going to keep moving forward, and that there's still so many good things ahead. And there is a saying in the through hiking world that you can split a long trail into three sections. The first third, the challenges are going to be physical. The second third, the challenges are going to be mental. And the third, spiritual. I will also say, from experience, they're also financial. You're not working for 6 months. And probably a little bit nutritional, but that's neither here nor there. So I am deep into my mental third, and I have recently entered the hellscape that is Pennsylvania. If anyone is not familiar with the Appalachian Trail in Pennsylvania, I would recommend not becoming familiar with it. It is hot. It is rocky. It's kind of stinky, and that is you, but like, it's still the state. I would rather eat my left toe than ever walk through Pennsylvania again. No disrespect to that state, but actually disrespect to that state. I changed my mind. But so I am really struggling, and I am about halfway through the trail, but it feels like I've been out there for so long, and I still have a whole half of the trail to go. And I'm also just kind of losing sight of why I'm doing it. You know, it's my feet are hurting. I just want a cheeseburger, and all I have is ramen noodles. And I'm missing the luxuries of everyday life, and I'm really missing home. And there was a day where I got to a shelter. It was like 98 degrees, and I was by myself, and I was feeling so lonely. And I was thinking about that little girl with the light-up sneakers, and I was like, okay, she can go fuck herself. Like, why did this have to be the lifelong dream? Couldn't it be, like, owning a horse or something that would require just like substantially less effort? But what are you gonna do? So a good friend of mine who I know from the Omen House, Jim Buckley, reached out and asked if he could meet me on the trail and give me snacks, which is called trail magic in the trail world. And so I meet him at this little pull-off in Pennsylvania, and he gives me a hug, and him and his wife give me snacks, and I tell him, I'm like, I don't know why, if I'm chasing the joy, I don't know where the joy is. And I just don't really know what I'm doing out here. And Jim Buckley is a multiple-time cancer survivor, and is just one of the kindest and most incredible human beings I've ever met, and has been a fierce ally to the young adult cancer community. And he looks at me, and with tears in his eyes, he says, you have to finish. You're doing this for all of us. And it was like a switch. And all of a sudden, it was this reminder that I'm not just doing it for me. I am doing it for the little girl in the light-up sneakers, but I'm also doing it for Crystal. I'm doing it for all the people who I met at Omen House. And also, it is a fucking privilege to be able to prioritize joy in your life. And there are so many people who don't have that. And through hiking and being outside and having 6 months to allot to something that means so much to you is a gift. And every step is a gift. Even if that gift takes you through Pennsylvania. That's part of it. So what I started doing is I started writing names on my arm of the people who inspired me, the people who raised me, the people who I had seen overcome really big challenges. And every time I would want to quit, every time mosquitoes would bite me in every crevice, I would look down at my arm and remember that I couldn't stop. I had to keep going because there were good things ahead. And that even though it did suck in the moment, there were still things that I needed to work for. I needed to do it for all the people who I was hiking with. And so in late September of 2021, I hiked my last peak in the 100-mile wilderness before I was going to reach Katahdin. Katahdin is the northern terminus of the AT. The numbers were dwindling of the miles I had left until I was done, and this was the last time I was going to be above 3,000 feet before I reached the finish line. And I was sitting up top, and I was looking out at this perfect view of Katahdin, this goal that I had been thinking of every day for 6 months, and really every day since I was 10 years old. And I checked my phone to see if I had service, and I did. And I got a notification that someone had donated, and I had officially hit my fundraising goal of $15,000 to support the Ullman House. And it was this surreal moment where I had reached this giant goal, and this other goal was in arm's reach, and I felt so unwaveringly proud, and I felt Crystal with me. And I felt all the people who I had been writing their names on my arms. And I thought about Mary, and I thought about that little girl in the light-up sneakers. And a few days later, I was standing on that weathered sign on top of Katahdin with Crystal's name written on my arm. And I knew that every last one of those 2,193.1 miles was for her. And a few days later, I was back in Baltimore, and I got the honor of having Crystal's family fly in, and our friends and our close teammates come in, and we got to ring that giant yellow cowbell for Crystal. And I was looking around, and I was thinking about these giant goals that I had accomplished, and I was so proud, and I felt Crystal in all of them. And then I thought about all of the grief and the sorrow and all the chaos that's in this world, and it was just this reminder that there always is going to be good things ahead. Thank you.
Such an incredible story. And then she went on to hike the
PCH.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, there are so few people that finish the Appalachian Trail to then go and set herself up. She's amazing. Amazing.
And I like that it's not all like, you know, pussycats and butterflies. Like, she's like, I fucking hate Pennsylvania. Yeah. You know, all of this, like, it's really hard and you're just slogging through sometimes. But being guided by the privilege, it's like when you don't have cancer, you have a privilege of choosing your own form of torture as opposed to being tortured by cancer.
Yep.
Before we get to this next story, we are going to take a quick break.
So this next storyteller, when we, you know, so for the Stoop, we do a coaching session, and then we have, for our curated shows, we have a coaching session, then we have the show itself. We might work with someone in between. And Stacey, when she did the coaching session, it was like 27 minutes. And that was okay. Like, she needed, it was the first time she'd ever, and wow, that may be an exaggeration. Stacey, you are amazing. And I am nothing but like honored to know you. But, and she would say like, yeah, she was really nervous to do this. It was not, you know, it was on her bucket list to do the Stoop. And she had gone through so much, and it was hard to figure out, you know, what story to tell.
It's like to get your arms around it and wrestle it. Yeah.
Such a beautiful story. Take a listen.
So I am not a risk taker. I have major trouble trusting people, including myself. And I am absolutely petrified of heights, like a three-step ladder. Will send me in shivers. But yet, I found myself in a prop plane flying over the Vegas desert with a parachute on my back. Yeah. That's exactly how I felt. So how I got there was, this was 3 days after my 50th birthday. I had spent the last 2 years healing from a marriage. Okay, we're going to borrow your name and call him, was it Asshat? Asswipe. Sorry. Not her husband, but probably his twin. And also fighting breast cancer. And I was desperate to feel anything at all, besides whatever it was I was feeling, all that darkness, and whatever that I hide behind my beautiful smile that everyone tells me that I have and that I carry it so well, and all of that crap. So this took me a full year to convince myself to do this. I researched it like crazy. I told every single person that I knew, and typical to me, I overthunk it a million times. And I realized that I needed somebody to come with me to hold me accountable. So remember, I was 50, and none of my friends, I'm sorry, Anne, none of my friends qualified. But I realized that I had given birth to the perfect candidate 19 years earlier. So my oldest son, Gavin, the one that made me a mom and everything that I've always wanted to be, he is hilarious and caring and empathetic and manipulative. And really, really impulsive and not always makes the best decisions. And he also went through the same exact life that I went through in his 19 short years. And with all of that and all of the different traits that he had, in order to cope, despite my best trying, he turned to drugs. And at the age of 18, he got his driver's license. And within about 4 to 6 months, he totaled 2 cars. And it really was a major wake-up call for all of us. And after a lot of conversations with him and a lot of coaxing, thank goodness, he decided to choose rehab over homelessness, because that was his choice. And the time of the skydiving trip, he would have been about, he was 2 weeks away from his 1 year soberversary. So I figured, well, that's a great reason to come celebrate with me. I'm going to celebrate me being alive. You're lucky to be alive, too. So I called his sponsor, and who was immediately on board. And we, Gavin and I packed up a few months later, and we flew out to Vegas. So we wind up, after another long trip, different story, we wind up at the hangar where the plane is. Now, I have to tell you, I did such a great job convincing myself I was ready. I was so ready. I was excited. I was could not wait to get in that jumpsuit and to get on that plane. And he was just beyond, like, could not believe that, like, mom, who wouldn't even climb a rock, was actually going to skydive. But he also understood what that meant for me, right, and was really supportive and loving and all of that, too. So this were tandem dives. This was not us, the two of us, just jumping out with our own parachutes. So we had our own partners. Mine was named Cash. I have no clue what his was named. I wasn't paying attention. I was much more worried about myself. And we got out. We did, like, some, you know, can you sit down? Can you do this? Like, here, put on the suit. All these, like, weird things that they make you do before you go skydiving. Sign every waiver possible. I bought the best package ever. What I didn't tell you is I'm also currently a recovering perfectionist, but then very much so a perfectionist. So in my mind, I was going to buy the best package of video and photography ever, because this was going to be like the best experience of my life, and I needed it recorded. So we get out to the plane, and I don't know what I was thinking, but I didn't really realize how small and thin prop planes really are These things are tiny. So there's five of us. It's myself and Cash and Gavin and his dude and the pilot. The pilot, by the way, was watching us do these exercises where, like, I had to, like, crouch down in, like, this weird position for a long time. And I can just tell he was like, this is so not going to happen. And he had that face on the entire time. And it turns out that they wanted me to go out first. So I get the lucky seat. There's also no seats in the plane besides the pilot seat. So we're all on the ground. And I get the lucky idea that I get to crouch down next to the pilot and whatever that, like, stick shift thing is on the floor, between the stick shift thing and the door. And if you picture, like, the passenger side of your car and, like, the floorboard area, it was smaller than that. And I mean, I love my body, but I'm not small. So it was rough. And I'm sitting down there, crouched down in this crazy outfit with the parachute, and, like, Cash is behind me. And my son, who's, like, 6'1", gets to sort of sprawl out in the back. And the plane's getting higher and higher, and you can feel every single movement. And every once in a while, I'd catch this pilot looking at me, like, side-eyed, like, this is going to be interesting. And I was trying to, like, ignore his, you know, vibes, but it was getting more and more difficult. And it really got impossible when Cash came up behind me and, like, whispered. It's super loud, right? So he whispers in my ear, or probably yelled in my ear, and he's like, are you ready, Stacy? Let's go. Are you ready? I'm going to hook on to you. We're going to go. Remember what we practiced? And I was all like, yeah, I'm totally good. This is going to be awesome. And then the door opened. And as much as my mind wanted to have this amazing experience, every cell in my body said, oh no fucking way, this is not happening. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, it literally shut down. And Cash is there. And again, by the way, this was a few years ago, still have not watched the video and only pulled one picture. So I really don't remember most of it. I can tell you that what I'm thinking happened is, like, he was, like, halfway out and halfway in the plane, kind of, like, leaning over because he's attached to me, trying to make me stand up, right? And here I am, this woman of my size, trying to sort of convince my legs to actually stand up. But not only do they not want to, they're numb because my entire body has been laying on them for so long, right? So I look up and I see this thing and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's something I could grab onto to hold to maybe prop myself up. And I reach my hand up. I've learned my lesson. It is red and hanging from the ceiling of an airplane. You do not want to try to grab for it. The pilot and Cash, no, top of their lungs. I'm like, okay, great. Hold on to my, you know, thing, get up. And Cash has his foot out on the little, I'm going to call it a plank, because that's kind of what it looked like. And he's like, get your foot out here, you need to get out. And I just couldn't. So my foot's, like, sort of dangling out of, like, midair, because I can't find the step. And I hear him go, you need to look for the step. And I go, have you not heard me? I'm petrified of heights. And from the back of the plane, and I find this out later, my son had no clue what was going on because you can't hear anything. But from the back of the plane, I hear clear as day Gavin's voice scream, you've got this, Mom. You've got this. Come on. Do this. This is your dream. And it immediately snapped me out of it. And I put my foot onto the plank, and somehow, I don't remember how, I put my second foot onto the plank. And the other thing is, what they want you to do is go towards the front of the plank, far enough out, almost like you're at a diving board with, like, your toes over. Well, that wasn't happening. So Cash, kind of like what you would do for, like, you know, like a dog that's not moving, or like maybe your toddler who just refuses to leave the toy section, and you kind of, like, gently, like, kick their feet and their knees. He gets me up far enough to where I literally hear him say, well, I guess this is it. We're just going to go. and we tumble out of the plane. And I will tell you. I'm glad that was exciting for you, because it was unbelievably exciting for me. It was honest, I'm not even joking, it was honestly the most freeing I had felt in years. I'm talking 20-year marriage to asswipe's twin brother. I'm talking breast cancer journey that can fill four more of these stories. They've heard it. They know. And everything else. And it was, I finally felt alive. I felt free. I was whooping. I was hollering. I was like, this is the best thing ever. Parachute opens. We got like situated. We're finally sort of able to talk because the wind had calmed down a little bit with the parachute. And Cash, like, how are you doing? And he's trying to GoPro me. And I'm like, I'm doing great. This was amazing. And I think he was shocked, because that is not the answer he expected. And we land on the ground, and he unhooks, and I turn around, and I give him, like, the biggest bear hug ever, and I am bawling, and I'm like, that was amazing. And then my perfectionist side of me says, can we go do that again? Because I didn't do it correctly. And Cash looked at me dead serious and said, absolutely not. You're welcome to come back another time, but not right now. I can't do this. And I said, okay. And I said, well, wait, where's Gavin? Because in all of the videos, like, they all jump out together. Another lesson I've learned is that there's only a certain amount of airspace that you're allowed to let people out of a plane. I took so damn long. The plane had to go around another time to let Gavin out, which was actually kind of cool because I got to see him actually come down. He landed, Mr., like, you know, adrenaline rush king, was super happy. But we, you know, hugged, and, like, I cried. He probably was like, Mom, you're embarrassing me, whatever. We got our little video stuff. We pack up, and we leave. And my dream, part of that perfectionist dream, was I'm going to leave all of that freaking fucking shit up there. And I'm going to land as a totally different person, because that's me. I want to wake up tomorrow and be 110 pounds and be an amazing model, right? Like, and that's not how life works. And I knew that, you know. So what it did give me the courage to do, it gave me the courage to look around and say, you know what? Like, my body is stronger than I thought it was ever going to be. My mind is stronger than I thought it was ever going to be. And I now get to make these little changes and take these little baby steps to become the person that I want to be in this world and show up in a totally different way. And I'm not there yet. I most likely will never be there. Neither will any of you. I hate to break the news to you. But what I have learned through all of it is to love my imperfect self. And that's my story. And it's under 8 minutes.
Well, she did that. Boy, this is a really fun story.
It's so inspiring. So thanks again for listening to another installment of the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. We want to thank Maureen Harvey for being our intrepid, patient, kind, lovely producer. And we look forward to bringing you more stories next time.
Support comes from Catholic Charities. Driven by the message of love your neighbor, Catholic Charities is focused on improving lives in Maryland. Give the gift of love during this holiday season and learn more at cc-md.org/love.